Okay. So I guess there's like two orders of business on this meeting. One of them is simple, which is, you know, that we propose still for election of the board. So I think we'd like to take care of that first. And then the second one will be to talk about just preliminary thoughts, and it's really just preliminary at this point, about, you know, the direction of GiveWell for 2013, what our big picture goals are going to be. I think this is going to be a pretty, you know, ongoing and ongoing conversation. We have some difficult choices to make.
Yeah, so just on that, normally, you know, we put together our written plan for the year, and we're still going to do that, but we wanted to have a kind of a slightly more open-ended discussion with you guys before we put that plan together.
Okay.
Sounds good. Okay. So first off, Phil. So just some basic background of Phil. I mean, Phil's been a follower of the project for a very long time, I mean, pretty much since the beginning. We've always thought that he, you know, made interesting contributions and gave us good advice. And, you know, there were times when we even had him sitting on board calls, even though he wasn't on the board, because he was kind of a mentor to us. And, you know, has experience himself with entrepreneurship. And, you know, the reason that we haven't had him on the board in the past is pretty simple, which is just that, like, the board used to place much more emphasis than it does now on in-person meetings, both with the table. So now that we have a virtual board, and we, you know, we've lost some board members, we definitely want to have more people on the board who can provide the kind of role that Phil has played, which is kind of being critical and giving advice and giving thoughts. And so we're proposing, you know, we're nominating Phil for election of the board. And we would, you know, I think he talked to Tom, and so we'd like others to weigh in, and then we'd like to have that election. And I think our bylaws still stipulate that this has to be by written ballot. So if people could, you know, once we vote, I think we're going to do it by email. So if everyone could make sure you're on email, that'd be good. But we're not doing that yet. First, we'd like to just see if there are questions about Phil or if people have thoughts.
This is Tom. Just to kind of report back on my conversation with Phil, I mean, I feel like Phil will be a great board member for the reasons that Holden described. It's an, you know, interesting guy, good background, good entrepreneurial experience, thoughtful, tech savvy. I think, you know, not shy. You know, all very good qualities, and I think he'd be great.
Great.
And I'll just pick up. This is Phil here. Yeah. I look forward to being a part of this, and I've been, as Holden says, I've been a big supporter of what GiveWell's been doing for a long time. I like the idea. I'm in Missouri, but I'm willing to travel, you know, occasionally to do in-person type stuff. I think it's a great project. I like not only GiveWell itself as an organization, but I like kind of the goals of GiveWell, and you know, I want my own money, my own charitable contributions to be you know, or those of myself or myself and my wife to be well guided, and I think GiveWell helps for that. So.
Thanks. So, other comments from people other than Tom and Phil? Anyone who hasn't talked to Phil, do you have any concerns or questions, or should we move on with the election?
He sounds like a great addition to me.
Yep. Okay, great. So I think we're going to go ahead, and if people could just email me, you know, we can mark the timestamp now. I mean, I'm proposing that we elect Phil to the board. If people could email me a yes or no to holdenandgiveWell.org, that would be great. Maybe I'll wait like 30 seconds for people to do that. You can also do it as we proceed on the call. Okay. So the next topic is, you know, is kind of the tough one. The next topic is this question of, you know, what are we going to do in 2013? And the main question that we've been wrestling with, it's a sub-question of this, but kind of, you know, to us, the starting question, and the thing that's really important. We've historically had GiveWell, and then we introduced a thing called GiveWell Labs, and the idea of GiveWell Labs was to get away from some of the restrictions that we had imposed on ourselves previously, and kind of open ourselves to this full universe of giving opportunities that a major philanthropist can take advantage of. And I think there was a time where we kind of said, you know, well, GiveWell Labs can kind of, it has a lot of overlap with GiveWell Normal, and we can kind of, you know, we can meet demand for GiveWell Normal and put the rest of our time into GiveWell Labs. And I would say over the course of 2012, that we basically found this approach did not work. And I would say we did not get where we wanted to go with GiveWell Labs. We didn't produce enough. We didn't spend enough time on it. And I think the reason for that is that, like, the idea that we could meet demand somehow with GiveWell 1, or now I'm kind of calling them GiveWell 1 and GiveWell 2. I'm finding it easier to do that. So GiveWell 1 is kind of proven cost-effective, scalable charities that you write unrestricted checks to, and you can say that these contribute to delivering things like bednets that, you know, have evidence behind them, or, you know, have like a really strong case that they've worked before and they'll work again. And GiveWell 2 is this much more open-ended attempt to find the best giving opportunity. And I would say that the idea that we could meet demand for GiveWell 1 and have anything left over, I think just turned out to be false. Because the issue with GiveWell 1 is that people, I think, have come to expect a pretty high level of depth. And people, you know, when we're promoting our recommendations for GiveWell 1, people ask a lot of questions about them. And we really tried to make it our mission to have as good answers to all those questions as we could have in a reasonable period of time. And what happens is questions keep coming up, and it really swamps our ability to answer them. It's just like there's really no limit to the time we could spend better understanding all the nuances of the case for bednets as compared to deworming, as compared to cash transfers, as compared to everything else we could be doing. And so if we try to meet demand and we're holding ourselves to that same high standard of evidence, we're not going to have any time for GiveWell 2. And I think that's unacceptable to us because we think GiveWell 2 is where we would bet today that we'll find actually the best giving opportunities and the opportunities that best, the best fulfill GiveWell's mission as originally and consistently outlined in its mission statement. So that's, I think, another thing that we've kind of discovered is that there is a sizable contingent of donors who I think is not very comfortable with GiveWell 2, basically would like to see us focus on continuing to have this clear set of criteria, on continuing to look for things that are backed by evidence, that are proven, that are scalable, that don't require as many judgment calls and risks as a lot of philanthropy. And I think this is, you know, basically a valid point of view. And, you know, we're not going to make those people happy by focusing on GiveWell 2. So the way I kind of see things, I think the way we kind of saw things before is they're part of the same project. And the way I see things now is basically that, like, GiveWell started off trying to find the best giving opportunities. But along the way, we developed a brand for something else. We developed a brand for finding things that are really proven and really going to a level of depth that, in my opinion, is actually inconsistent with finding the best giving opportunities and is more consistent with just finding, like, opportunities that meet certain criteria and really, like, nailing those criteria and really getting every detail right. And so, you know, we now, I think, have kind of two different projects and two different audiences, and some people like one and some people like the other. And I largely think the two have to be separated. I think the two are going to compete in some way for resources and for person hours. We tossed around the idea of even making them separate organizations or at least making the names more different than GiveWell and GiveWell Labs. This isn't something we're necessarily planning to do, but I'm just trying to give a sense that, you know, we kind of feel like they're different projects, they involve different work, they have different stakeholders. It's not clear to us that there's a really great process for deciding how much to do of each, except to kind of separate them and say these are two different projects. Some people like one and some people like the other. And look at, you know, the personnel of GiveWell and like and take their desires into account in determining how much time we're gonna allocate to each. So we're looking for a pretty big bifurcation in that way. Not sure that it's gonna involve a different name or a different organization, but I'm trying to paint a picture of something where we do have kind of like two separate things going on, and we recognize that we don't have enough capacity to do either one to its full potential, and therefore person hours that go into one project are person hours that are coming out of the other project. So that's a big difference in framing, and it leads to some tough decisions, and so I'm going to pause there and see if people have questions on that point.
So, okay, so our first question is just on the simple question of resources. It sounds like I got a little bit of a mixed message. Is it that there are insufficient resources, or is it the fact that the same resources are being kind of alternately allocated between one and two that's the source of the friction, or is it both?
Those kind of sound like the same issue to me, so I'm not sure exactly what the answer is. I mean, the way I put it is that there's like
there's way too much work for either one for us to do with the people that we have. So if we put everyone on GiveWell 1 and we dropped GiveWell 2 entirely, we still would not be doing everything we could for GiveWell 1, and we still would, there would still be all these questions and points of evidence and interventions that we were not looking into. And on the other hand, if we dropped all of GiveWell 1 and we were only working on GiveWell 2, I think then we would still, there would be a lot of work we could be doing and weren't doing for GiveWell 2. And so that's why I'm kind of realizing we have to reject this framework in which, in which we can meet demand for GiveWell 1 and put leftover time into GiveWell 2. I feel like that's what we tried to do in 2012. The result was that there were a million questions that came up around insecticide resistance and around, this concern and that concern, and I spent a lot of time on these things and ran out of time for GiveWell 2, and we basically made no progress. I mean, no, we made progress on GiveWell 2, but not nearly as much as we wanted.
Go
ahead.
So I was just going to say, I mean, the first question I think could be answered potentially by just hiring a bunch more people, and I realize that raises other issues. The second problem would be addressed by what you described if you created two different organizations. So that's kind of what I'm getting at.
I mean, this is a conversation, hiring people is I think we have to count that as a use of resources, not as a way to get additional resources. It's obviously both, but I mean, hiring people to do it right can take years. I mean, that's what we found over the course of GiveWell. And so if we were to say, let's hire enough people to do both, well, we could spend all our time just trying to hire people to do GiveWell 1. And we could spend all our time just trying to hire people to do GiveWell 2. So it really becomes the same issue in any kind of short or medium term, in my opinion.
To me, it sounds a little bit like you're thinking about things sort of from the organizational, from sort of your side of the screen. View that on your end you're having difficulty splitting time, retention, or resources between sort of two different concepts, and sort of it sounds like you're leaning towards, again, either splitting the organization or something significantly more dramatic than what you've done in the past. Looking at it from the other side of the screen, from the user's point of view, I think if you were to come out now and say, okay, we've got GiveWell 2, whatever the right name would be for GiveWell 2, and it's this whole different organization, and it's got this whole different process and these whole different charities and all, I think it would be very confusing to the end users. I worry that it would, end users who are only just sort of becoming aware of GiveWell, the original GiveWell, and becoming comfortable with it, and it's being successful, but I don't think it's anywhere near sort of saturation point. I worry that it would muddy the waters depending on how you might approach splitting off. Two things I guess I would throw out there as things to kick around a little bit. One is you could do a little bit more, behind the scenes, your side of the curtain, splitting just in terms of how people are allocated or how time is allocated, and be sort of firmer in separating things there so that somebody can feel like, for the next 12 months I'm completely focused on GiveWell 1 or GiveWell 2 or whatever. On the other side, on the user side, on the user presentation side, you kind of have moved away from – there was a point in time early on in GiveWell, or basically at the beginning, GiveWell was not so clearly defined. They had five different causes. I think the first year there was, we're going to research five different causes and make a recommendation on each of these causes, and they're kind of apples to oranges, so we're not going to be completely saying that, this area is better than the other area and so on. And even as recently as last year, you had, I think, different levels of charity recommendations, gold, silver, whatever, gold and ready to watch, things like that. And you've moved increasingly towards a very sort of narrow and hierarchical, here's our number one charity, and here's our number two, and here's our number three, and nothing else matters approach, and we're not really looking anywhere right now outside of African health and social development. So what I'm thinking is perhaps you could just kind of roll things back a little bit towards the way they were, where you could say, if you want, this type of recommendation, maximum lives saved per dollar, here's what we recommend, bed nets or what have you. If you want something, if you're open to a different approach, something very different where it's much harder to measure and, blah, 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 split it up so it's all under the GiveWell brand, but it's a little bit more clearly separated and you don't try to put everything on one list.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with all of that. I mean, I think for sure, there's no need to really, to really make things more confusing than they have to be until we have a compelling reason to. And so
you know, a lot of this stuff might be more behind the curtain until we really have recommendations for Gigwell 2. It's possible. I think there's a pretty high probability that when we really do have recommendations available for Gigwell 2, that those recommendations will just be, like, inconsistent with a lot of what people like about Gigwell 1, and that at that point we're going to face a situation where we really do need to separate the brands. You know, so that Gigwell 1 is able to keep its reputation for kind of being very evidence-based and kind of objective-ish, while Gigwell 2 is able to, like, recommend the things that we honestly think are the best way to improve the world. So, you know, I think we're going to run into it. I do agree. We don't have to rush into, you know, public relations issues that could cause problems for us. But I think on the back end, you know, I think we do have to disclose this in some way. I mean, I don't think we should be redesigning our website to distinguish between these two and super confuse people when we don't have a compelling reason to do so. I think, though, that, you know, people who want to know what's going on should know what's going on, but certainly the board and the stakeholders need to know what's going on. So the focus of this call has been so that, you know, the people on the inside need to know. And I think the people even on the outside will know if they want to know via blog post that this is going on and that, like, you know, we do see these as two different projects that are competing for resources, and they are going to make decisions about how much resources each one gets.
What are a couple of examples of things that would fit under the GiveWell 2 model that you didn't have as much time as you wanted to explore last year because of GiveWell 1 commitment?
And I would say we just didn't.
I think it might also be good to give an example of, you know, the kind of thing that might fall under GiveWell 2 that you think would conflict with the brand of GiveWell 1. It's a you know, follow-on to Dan's question.
Sure. I mean, I'll give a couple of what I consider probably extreme examples. Like, I think it's very plausible that the best way to make the world a better place with money is to fund political advocacy to push for certain legal changes that, like, aren't even all that uncontroversial. Like you know. So I'm not going to get into the actual examples because I don't want to get into a debate over one of these issues on this phone call. But this is, you know, this is an example of something where. And to defend myself for a second, I mean, I do think these are policy changes. I don't think these are, like, left versus right type things. I think these are things where, you know, if you talk to intelligent humanitarians on both the left and right, they would agree to these things. And I think there are intelligent humanitarians on both the left and right. So I don't, you know, what I'm not about to say is that, like, the best use of money is to, like, you know, promote Democrats over Republicans or some hot button issue. But, you know, but hey, I could come to believe that.
I'm having a hard time. I'm having a hard time hearing you all of a sudden. Did anything change in the phone situation?
I paced a little bit, so I went further away from my phone, so maybe I'll get to have a seat. So some of the things that I think, you know, to stop that digression for a moment, and I'm gonna not name issues at this time because I don't want to get into a debate over a particular political issue. But I do think there are, like, policy changes that, at least at a superficial level, are somewhat controversial, even if I don't think they're particularly controversial among intelligent humanitarians. And I think if we were to, you know, to post about one of these and say it's a great opportunity to improve the world, I think a lot of people would say, what the hell is this? Like, you know, this is, like, an opinion that something is really good for the world. It's not proven the way defendants are proven. This is not, like, the brand that I know from GiveWell. And I would have a lot of sympathy for that, and I would want to kind of protect the GiveWell brand in some way by making a separation very clear, so that people don't think that we think that these things are, like, evidence-backed. So that's an example, like, a pretty extreme example. Political advocacy is an area where I think the two are really going to be at odds. And then, you know,
yeah,
on the
I'm
other
sorry,
side,
I think, I don't know, it may just be me, it may be a problem with my phone, but I didn't hear what you just said clearly enough to it sounded like you concluded by saying that's an example, and I didn't get the example. It was some kind of advocacy?
How are other people doing not hearing me?
I struggle a lot to hear you, Holden. You get a lot more static. I get a lot more static on your voice than on any of the other voices.
All right. So I have, like, three different phone setups here, and I've had problems with every single one of them. So I'm going to try switching from Bluetooth to speakerphone. We'll see if that works. If it doesn't, let me know, and I'll switch to Skype. If that doesn't work, I'll try something else. Hold on a second. All right. I'm on speakerphone now. Is this any better?
That sounds better so far. Yeah.
Okay. This is a little harder for me to hear, but that's okay for the time being. So I'll give this example for the third time. The political advocacy. There may be
there may be a even somewhat controversial political issue where, you know, we come to believe that the best thing you can do with money is to advocate for change on this political issue. And I could see people quite reasonably reacting to this and saying, this is not the give all I know. This is, you know, not proven by evidence the way Bettinus are. This is controversial. Like, you know, this is not a give all that I'm comfortable with. And I would totally sympathize with that. And in some ways, I'd want to protect the original give all brand by making it very clear that this is a different thing, and that we don't think that, like, the political advocacy thing is supported by evidence. So, all right, that's my example. Did people hear that okay?
Yeah, but doesn't that example assume that you're somehow changing the scoreboard? Like, I thought initially you were saying that the core mission would stay the same. You know, it's just
yeah.
sort of, you know, where can your dollar do the greatest good? And I assume that the only way to adjudicate that would be with evidence. So what would be different about that?
I had to react to that. I have a pretty highly negative reaction to that as an idea. I wasn't quite sure what you were thinking of with GiveWell Labs, and I appreciate that it was pushed as something to become clearer, to talk about more clearly. And if that's the direction of GiveWell Labs, to sort of find and advocate political causes, I really, really don't like that, even if I don't know. It's almost like so nuclear radioactive. I don't see how you can separate that from the original GiveWell without potentially running a risk of, you know, I think we've briefly talked about this in the past, and my view has been there are hundreds, if not thousands, of organizations out there that attempt to determine and advocate for what they believe to be the best political causes, and of course, many, many times at complete loggerheads with each other. And I think GiveWell is so good at what it does now. I just really don't see I don't see this as a promising direction at all.
Right. So, I mean, this is a conversation we've had, and, like, I think Phil and Dan are doing a good job of advocating the kind of pro-GiveWell One position. Now, one thing I want to say, do make clear, I mean, I'm not planning for political causes to be the thing that GiveWell 2 is about. In fact, initially, I think it'll be a pretty small part of it. And so I don't want people thinking, okay, that's just what it's going to be. But I purposely raised that issue because I thought it was the one that would bother people most. And it is the one that is most out there by far, because I want people to know exactly what we're talking about and what we're potentially dealing with. And, you know, I'm just going to say that I do not agree with the attitude that's being expressed here, that, like, the way to do the most good is to rely on evidence. I really never believed that. There were reasons that we focused on proven interventions for GiveWell initially, and I can go over what those were, but, you know, I've really never believed that the way to accomplish the most good, that the only path to that is through evidence, and other people do, and I think that's, like, a totally legitimate point of view, and it's a legitimate disagreement, and this is a great example of how, you know, how there's going to be a sizable contingent of people who support GiveWell as they've come to know it, but don't really support GiveWell as I ultimately envision it, which is, you know, trying to find the best giving opportunities without arbitrary restrictions, being transparent about why we think they are what they are, and starting a global public conversation about how to do that. That I believe that conversation is not happening now, and I believe that the way we do our work and the way we have done our work with the transparency we have can start that conversation. So it's two different visions of GiveWell. I have to say the one I'm pointing to that I think is scaring some people is actually, to me, has been the vision all along, and I'm recognizing that along the way we've created this other brand that some people find exciting. So I don't want it to die, but it is actually not what I ever quite had in mind.
I think you're reading my take as being negative, and I may well be negative eventually, but I'm really trying to understand at this point. So if GiveWell One has largely been defined by using evidence to differentiate various giving opportunities, what would GiveWell Two be defined by if not evidence? How would you prioritize opportunities?
So just transparency is what would make us different. Like honestly, the way we would prioritize opportunities would involve a heavy dose, and frankly, GiveWell One already involves this, a heavy dose of personal judgment and a heavy dose of, you know, well, we have laid out our reasons for thinking this, not all the reasons are things we can prove, but, you know, here's the evidence we had, here's what we do know, and, like, given the limited available information, here's what we would guess. We actually do a fair amount of that already with Gibwell, but it would definitely be more noticeable and more prominent and more extreme. There's no question about that. And so that's, you know, that's kind of it. And I think what would be different and what would still be Gibwell about this organization is that I don't believe that there's another organization out there that's publicly writing about what it thinks are the best giving opportunities and why, and kind of surveying and comparing all the different possible things you might give to in order to, you know, in order to come to that view. So I think that it's basically a topic of discussion that I don't believe exists right now, and kind of like we started GiveWell to start that discussion out in an open public way, and we started in a certain place, but that and not evidence was kind of the, you know, has always been the driving philosophy of GiveWell, and our mission statement talks about outstanding giving opportunities. It doesn't talk about evidence.
And you think that the current, like, if you were to find the people who most value what GiveWell represents today, do you think that they would find this new direction consistent, like that you're still filling the demand that brought them to you in the first place?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people who believe that, and I think there's obviously people who you know, still is expressing don't believe that, but I think there's a lot of people who do for sure.
So, I mean, Dan, this is a lot of where we're coming from with this discussion, and then with this, in particular, the question of whether this should be seen as more of a separate activity or even entity, is this exact question or this exact issue that, you know, I think there are a large contingent of our current fans who are, you know, who have the same vision that we do for the type of activity GiveWell should undertake, meaning looking into new and different areas that could potentially be extremely effective, even if they don't meet the criteria that we've relied on in the past. And at the same time, there's a whole contingent of people who really specifically want the criteria that we've relied on in the past. And so therefore, like, we see both of those as, you know, essentially two distinct products in some sense that we'd like to offer to the different sets of donors that want them.
Can you go, you mentioned that sort of your, Holden, you mentioned that sort of political type stuff is your most far out example. Could, you know, what's, give me another example that's not so far out, that's not political, of GiveWell.
Yes, meta research is the one that we've talked about a bunch this year, and it's the one that we're putting the most effort into at this moment. So if you want to know the one that's kind of like commanding the most of our attention instead of the one that I deliberately picked to be controversial, it would be meta research. And so meta research is kind of, you know, it grew out of trying to find the best giving opportunities. And we noticed that when we were looking at the evidence on deworming, there's all these issues. Like, we need to, you know, we want to be able to check the calculations that went into this claim that deworming is really effective, but we can't check the calculations because, like, the data isn't public and the code isn't public, and eventually we got it from the authors, but it took forever. And sort of, you know, there's a critical mass of researchers, and I would say, you know, probably most researchers who believe that this stuff, it should just be public in the first place, and it's kind of a problem of incentives in the academic research community that there are all these things that would make research more valuable and more useful, but kind of individual academics don't have the incentive to do them. So that includes sharing your data and code. It includes pre-registering, which is something that we've talked about a lot, which is kind of declaring your hypothesis in advance, so that when you publish and you say, well, this is what we found, that people know, people can have more information, determine the extent to which you were data mining, the extent to which you were kind of looking for the results you wanted, versus the extent to which you were just reading the evidence. And that can make, you know, that can make scientific knowledge more valuable. Now, we ran across this cause by looking at things like deworming, but actually the more people I talk to, the more I become convinced that this is this broad area, this broad phenomenon of there are certain things academics could be doing to make their research more valuable and more reliable, but they're not doing it because their individual incentives don't line up that way. But, you know, kind of a third party or a funder can start moving things in the right direction. That's a dynamic that I don't believe just exists in the, you know, in the deworming type area. I think actually that dynamic also exists in some of the hard sciences, in biomedical sciences. And so, you know, in the course of these conversations, I started talking to people who work in all different fields, and, you know, there's one guy who's been one of our earliest GiveWell fans, this guy Dario, you know, is a biologist and has kind of taken this idea and run with it. So he has a kind of a group of friends and kind of like the original GiveWell, they're meeting in an informal way and they're interviewing academics. This is not something that GiveWell is providing any formal support to at this time or even really informal support, but, you know, they're interviewing academics and saying, what are the structural issues here? What are the things that individual academics could be doing to make their science more valuable and to make science progress better, but that the incentives imposed by the academic system work against? And, you know, they're coming up with stuff that a funder could do. And these things could fall into the category of biomedical science or cancer research, or they could fall into the category of development economics and studying things like deworming. And it really all depends on the field. But this is something that they're doing that I think is cool. And if they found giving opportunities that were like, and they actually have found a bunch of giving opportunities, and I can send these. And, you know, we're not contemplating funding any at this time because we think they need a lot more investigation, and we don't plan to do that investigation right now because they're sort of doing it. But, you know, some of these opportunities look good. I mean, I think that'd be something we'd be interested in.
Okay. No, that's okay. No, that's fine. You said enough. Yeah, and I've heard about the meta research. Actually, meta research is something I draw a fairly strong distinction between political stuff and other stuff, and meta research doesn't really bother me as something that GiveWell or GiveWell Labs or whatever could branch off into. I guess my concern with political activities is not only is it, you know, so heavily traveled already by folks from all over the field, it presents a strong danger in my mind. Again, it's almost radioactive that it's hard.
Right.
I think it would be hard for you guys to get close to it without contaminating other parts of the organization.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, and that's why I'm talking about separating the brands. And, it may not be doable, and it may cause some hard choices, but, you know, I kind of started with the most out there stuff because I want people to realize, like, where we might be heading, and I think to a lesser degree, there are people who would see meta-research the way that you see politics. That, you know, not that it's radioactive, but that it's kind of, you know, it's very subjective. It's something where we're talking to experts, we're collecting ideas, but it's not something where we can kind of show you the evidence that, like, doing such and such will produce such and such results. So I think, you know, the problems start to crop up with better research. They'll crop up more with political advocacy. And, you know, I think it may be the right answer may be to have a different organization. The right answer may be that there's GiveWell and there's something else, and that's something else does stuff like political advocacy. But one thing I have to say is that, like, I mean, when we started GiveWell, I wanted to find the best way to spend money possible. I'll be really disappointed if we don't do that. And I will also say that when we started doing this, I think I was probably more skeptical with political stuff than I am now, because I kind of believe that, like, for any given position, there's a smart person on the other side of it, a smart humanitarian person on the other side of it. And I actually don't believe that anymore, and I can go into the reasons why, but, you know, I've become much more convinced that it's very possible that there's political issues that, like, you know, they're not radioactive among intelligent humanitarians. That, like, someone who's like, looking at the facts and coming with the humanitarian perspective, you know, that those people are basically all on one side, and the other side is, like, someone else, like people working in their self-interest or people who aren't as educated. That's something I believe. Like, you can argue with me. We can see if I can defend that position. Maybe I can't, and I would change my mind if I can't. But it's something I believe. And if I believe that, and if I believe the best opportunities to do good are in that area, like, I don't know. Like, I just, that's the work that I'm personally going to want to do. I mean, that's what I'm passionate about, is finding the best giving opportunities.
I think the state that I'm trying to get my head around is like this idea that our work has never been about evidence, which just sort of blew my mind. Like, I feel like one thing that worries me about this new direction is that, at least from my perspective, to date, the real anchor of your credibility as an organization has been you're the research guys. You know, you dig through the data, you look through it, you find the weaknesses, you find the strengths, you make a judgment, you share it with everybody else so they can double check your work. And so the research is, you know, the wellspring of your credibility, and it feels like in GiveWell 2, we're saying, because many of these domains don't have the same evidence base, we're going to substitute our own judgment for that. And that just, that feels like a step backwards.
I would say something in between. I mean, I think what we're still going to be doing is laying out the reasons we believe things, and to the extent that those reasons can be investigated by looking at research, we'll look at them, and I think that extent will be a lot. I mean, I think we'll be doing, you know, when I describe the work that Dario is doing to find meta-research ideas, I mean, that's a systematic process of talking to academics and seeing which common themes emerge. And, you know, any politics we did, I think, would probably look similar, that there would be, you know, there would be research and there would be facts and there would be surveys and there would be, you know, systematic attempts to explain why we think what we think and how this thing compares to other causes. So I think there is, you know, there is going to be some of that, and I also think it's easy to overestimate how much of that there is in the current GiveWell, where, like, you know, we already have a lot of areas where we're like, look, you know, here's insecticide resistance. We looked into it as much as we could. Insecticide resistance is a major threat for insecticide-treated nets. We looked into it as much as we could, and, you know, we have some things to say, but we haven't nailed it down, and we don't know, and we're making a guess. So I think the distinction may not be quite as strong as what you're saying, but I still think there's a lot to it in that a lot of people, I think it's definitely the case that a lot of people feel the wellspring of our credibility is our kind of, you know, our commitment to these objective, verifiable metrics that they can understand. And there are other people who don't feel that way. There are people who feel the wellspring of our credibility is more broad than that, that it's the fact that we discuss our reasons for things and that our reasons for things are good, and that everyone can participate in the conversation. So, again, to me, it's two different visions of GiveWell, but I'm definitely sticking by my claim that there are plenty of, you know, inner circle GiveWell fans who hold the second position.
Just to be clear, I mean, to put a different frame on it, I mean, I think it's obvious that, you know, it's definitely the case that evidence has been a primary, if not the primary thing we've been focused on, or one of the main criteria we've used in our work so far. And the question we have now is, like, what is the right next step for GiveWell to take? Is it to keep, like, broadening out in some sense around evidence, or is it to look into other areas where evidence might not be as strong? And, you know, we think that the best way to find additional outstanding giving opportunities that are as good as or significantly better than the ones we've found so far is to loosen the evidence criterion, as opposed to continuing to maintain a strict need for strong evidence of effectiveness.
I think when I was sort of hearing you guys talk about GiveWell Labs in the beginning and as the idea evolved, I sort of had a vision of this being kind of a series of somewhat open-ended areas of inquiry. I understand you have the general feeling that you just didn't get enough done in GiveWell Labs last year, but, like, what's, you know, if you could have done GiveWell 1, you know, what would have been enough to accomplish and give well too, to kind of have them both live concurrently, you know, putting aside the question of whether you have the resources for it.
You know, honestly, there's like no limit. So, like, I could come up with a story that I would feel decent about as, like, the output of, you know, the number of hours. I could think about how many hours I would have wanted to put in, and then I could think of an output that, you know, kind of plausibly goes along with those hours. But because it's so speculative, it would be hard to do that. It would take a lot of thought, and it could take a lot of different shapes. I think the more relevant observation is that there's no limit. I mean, it just, you know, my interest in this question and my passion for this question just, like, has no bounds at all. I'm like, you know, a 1,000-person organization spending its entire year on this thing, I would still be, like, completely dissatisfied with what they come up with and feel that they hadn't even come up with 1% as much as I wanted to come up with. So, I mean, that's a way of putting it that I think makes clear that, like, we're not going to say, okay, as long as we get X done on GiveWell 2, that the rest of our time is going to GiveWell 1 and we'll be happy. And we're not going to say as long as we can get X done on GiveWell 1, because GiveWell 1 is kind of the same way. I mean, there's really no limit to how much you can try to understand vetnets better and better. I don't think this is very good ROI in terms of getting dollars to accomplish more good, but in terms of being able to, like, answer people's questions and, like, you know, stand behind our recommendations, I think there's just no limit whatsoever to either one. And that's what I think makes the situation tough. And that's why, to me, you have to start calling them, in some sense, different projects and saying they compete for resources. They each get a certain allocation, and whatever they accomplish with that allocation is what they accomplish. And they're going to do the absolute most that they can with what they have.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of left with the feeling that this whole, that not only should the two projects, but this whole debate, this should all be part of GiveWell. I mean, I just feel like that, you know, GiveWell is a place, you know, certainly there is a brand for, you know, doing in-depth research on individual charities and, you know, nominating top charities every year. But I think it's also, you know, given what's happened on the blog and given the community that surrounded GiveWell, I just feel like the whole discussion about, you know, rational, efficient, high impact philanthropy, or just, you know, doing good, whether it's in the context of charities or not, I think the whole thing should be part of GiveWell, and I'd like you guys to be able to do that, but I would also feel really bad if you just chucked GiveWell one.
Yep. I mean, that certainly is a good articulation of my position and pretty much Holden's too. And, you know, there's a question around communications, like how we present these two different aspects where there may be, I think there likely is a sizable contingent of supporters who will be uncomfortable with them both existing under the same umbrella.
Yeah, I mean, in my mind, I think the problem you should try and solve is how to marshal more resources behind the research that you guys want to do.
Right, which is like a big focus. I mean, Holden did not go into this earlier, but, you know, we've talked a lot about one major goal for this year, which is making more progress on the GiveWell 2 research. Another major goal is adding capacity for the GiveWell 1 research so that can, you know, that we're able to maintain and continue to grow that while the GiveWell 2 research is getting going.
Yeah, I mean, that was the topic I was going to get to next. Like, I kind of paused, but, the first thing I just wanted to do was talk about why these two things are so different and why they have to be separate and, you know, why we have to kind of think about their hours in this way. And the second topic I was going to talk about is, okay, what are the actual hours going to be and how are we going to decide that? And that was going to include the stuff about hiring. So I can go into that now if this seems like the right
time.
Wait
on that for a second. Let me follow up a little bit on what Tom said. One of the things I thought for a while about GiveWell, but I haven't – I may have occasionally talked about it with you guys, but I haven't really come up with a good way to articulate it. There's a lot of assumptions that come with, you know, even with GiveWell 1's current approach, which is very heavily evidence-based, there are still a lot of assumptions that you guys are making or maybe value systems that you incorporate as you analyze things and come up with your recommendations. And hopefully they're reasonably well accepted, but I don't necessarily think they're universally accepted. But probably at least those who are supporters of GiveWell now are reasonably in sync with you guys. Where you guys are going, I think, is saying, well, what if we alter some of these assumptions a little bit? What if, you know, we either, for instance, devalue the importance of sort of evidence, you know, scientific social science studies or whatever in evaluating things, or what if we consider things in a very different direction? And I think that's personally, I don't have a big problem with that. I do have a problem sort of, and as I've already made clear, with political, because I think that just brings up a whole different ball of wax. But in general, if you want to loosen restrictions and say, well, what if instead of looking at sort of direct ways to assist starving four-year-olds or dying four-year-olds in Africa, we consider other things that might increase the knowledge base or whatever, I just think you maybe need to say that not everybody will come at things with the same. I guess it a little bit reminds me of the controversy that flowed around Give Directly and your recommendation of Give Directly. If rather than saying, you know, everybody has to share these assumptions that we share and therefore these recommendations come out, maybe say, you know, if this is what you value, going back to that old debate, you know, if you really want to help people in the United States, for those donors who might, for instance, and maybe that's too small of a segment to focus a lot of attention on, but it's possible. If you want to help kids in the United States and you don't want your dollars going to Africa, this is the best United States charity. If you value the advancement of knowledge, and some people might think that knowledge gains are far more than saving, you know, a few lives or whatever in the here and now, then here's how you advance knowledge. If you want to advance disease research, whatever. So again, I think maybe it's a matter of saying, you know, different donors have different sets of assumptions coming in, different value bases, and these are reasonable. So you hear some of the ones that different people at GiveWell and our support crew have, and hear some of the recommendations that flow out of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's tough about that approach is that we're just very cognizant that we're never going to have a menu that satisfies everyone, or even, honestly, even like a sizable chunk of the population. Like, what we're able to do, so what, one thing we are able to do is, like, concede that, you know, is not pretend that we have all the answers. One thing we're able to do is say, we're assuming this, we believe this, like, you know, you may disagree, and, like, within the universe of things that we happen to have looked into, we'll tell you what to do if you have different values. So we actually did that this year with our top three charities, where our blog post announcing the three top charities actually, you know, told people which one to give to. It spelled out, okay, we're putting in these assumptions, and if you don't agree with these assumptions, then give here, and if you do, then give here. But, you know, I think people, that's not what people really want. I don't think people found that very satisfying. I think what people really want is some kind of comprehensive menu, some kind of, well, you know, out of all the, like, thousands of different value sets that you have, you need to find the one that is me and then tell me what to do, and we just can't do that. And so, you know, what we can do with GiveWell Labs or GiveWell 2 or whatever one you want to call it, we can do the same thing we did with this year, which is we can say, this is our top recommendation, but we're assuming X. If you don't assume X, that our best advice is to do Y, although, like, we haven't looked into it, like, hard enough to know. And we're just very cognizant that a lot of people are going to find that highly dissatisfying, as they did with GiveDirectly. I mean, people absolutely freaked out about GiveDirectly, even though we presented it that way from the get-go.
Well, I would take issue. I don't think you spent a whole lot of time framing the choice. You may have mentioned it briefly in the blog. I don't think in general, I don't think GiveWell has put a lot of emphasis into framing choices and saying, if you have this value system, then this is a good recommendation. If you have a different value system, then this other thing is a different recommendation. I don't think you necessarily need a menu of every possible choice for thousands of different value systems. But I do think what you're basically saying is you've got two value systems. On the one hand, this value system that supported GiveWell 1 in the past, which was very evidence-based, and one way or another ended up fairly consistently pointing towards, you know, African social and medical charities. And now you're saying, well, you know, I hold and will not be satisfied until I can find the very best, you know, and with somewhat different value systems where it's not evidence-based and, you know, it's this. And that's, you know, so be it. I think you just sort of outlined for yourself, you know, I don't think you need every value system, but I think maybe part of getting over this hump is clearly saying, all right, here's value system two, here's the assumptions that go into that, and that's going to lead to some different paths and outcomes. And if you can communicate that to the end users, you know, well, what if we loosen these restrictions? Maybe that's part of the solution.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I mean, I definitely think we need to present things that way at a minimum. I mean, the maximum we thought about is really making it different organizations and different brands and saying, like, you know, here's GiveWell. GiveWell does proven cost-effective stuff. Here's this other thing. Like, we can just call it, like, you know, whatever, you know, Boogaloo. And Boogaloo, like, you know, finds the thing that this set of people think is good, and, like, it's not evidence-based. And I mean, evidence-based. I don't want to overstate this. It's evidence-based, but, you know, it's not as dependent on evidence, and it's not, you know, and all that. So we've talked about that. That would be the extreme version and a less extreme version. I mean, yeah, I think they're going to have to be clearly separated. And I think we don't want to let GiveWell 1 just die. I mean, I think we definitely don't want that. And so we want to keep it around, and we want to say, if you believe in this very evidence-driven view of the world, like, this is what we think are the best charities, and here's why. And I think we'll definitely want to keep that. And we'll want to keep it in a way.
We don't want to let GiveWell 1 die. And that's kind of a that's inferring that you almost want to put it on life support. I mean, in a perfect world, if you were following your whim, you know, how many, and you had to divide percentage-wise resources between the GiveWell 1 vision of doing things and the GiveWell 2 vision of doing things, how would you divide them?
So that's the next question I was going to talk about. So maybe I'll just jump right into that. I think the way – the way that I found most productive to think about this question is to think as if it were two different organizations, because it's kind of two sets of stakeholders, it's two sets of people with disagreement about what the best, you know, use of resources is, and they can both use unlimited resources. And so, like, the way that I thought about it is, like, what if there were two organizations and there were just, like, individual level negotiations for the various people involved? That doesn't mean each person gets to choose what they want. It means that each person negotiates with the two organizations to do what they want. And if, you know, if they actually were two organizations, that's actually what would happen. And so, you know, we talked about, I mean, some of the GiveWell staff members, including Ellie and myself, talked about what the world would look like in that world and who would want to do what. And, you know, where I basically came down is that, you know, I personally said I'm really passionate about GiveWell 2. However, I recognize that GiveWell 1 is this thing I've helped build that is cool. And so, like, you know, that's a tough one for me. But personally, like, I would be willing to do a certain amount for GiveWell 1 and want to put the rest of my time into GiveWell 2 in order to make GiveWell 1 be kind of a sustainable organization that over the long run doesn't need me to survive. And then Ellie, you know, kind of had a similar take. And so, you know, where we came out is with a certain vision of what we will do over the next year. And this is not final, but this is kind of what we're kicking around right now of, like, what, you know, what, according to this method of dividing up labor, what the two would look like over the coming year. And I think, you know, basically what we think is that, you know, I can say for myself, and I think this is also what Ellie thought and Alexander thought, and this is kind of where our consensus is right now, although we're open to change. What I would want to do is that, you know, I think it's very worth continuing to do updates on charities like AMF and GiveDirectly. I think that has an excellent return on investment because these are charities that are communicative, that we can work with. It doesn't take an exorbitant amount of time to do an update, and the update is something that we learn a lot from that, you know, I think is, like, really valuable in a broad way, and also, like, helps us determine if these are still, like, excellent giving opportunities, which I care about, especially because we don't actually have giving opportunities for GiveWell 2 that we think are better than GiveWell 1 yet. So that's, like, that seems very important, doing updates on AMF and GiveDirectly. The other thing that seems very important is, like, being open to finding the next AMF and GiveDirectly. However, I don't, based on past experience and based on my knowledge of ROI, I don't believe that that actually involves all the things we've done before to try and find another top charity. I don't believe it involves going through hundreds of charities' websites. I don't believe it involves finding interventions and then really going after those charities and trying to drag information out of them through this very painful process when, like, they're not enthusiastic about participating, they don't communicate well with us, and it's, you know, the whole thing is kind of like pulling teeth. And so what I do think would be worth it is kind of what I would call an open-door policy where we spell out, you know, this is what makes AMF and GiveDirectly what they are. This is what a charity has to do to meet that standard. They'd have to send us a lot of information. And if a charity sent us a lot of information, you know, it wouldn't have to be every single thing we asked for, but if they sent enough of it that we said, okay, this is an AMF or GiveDirectly caliber organization, this is someone we're going to be able to communicate with and learn from, then, you know, then we would do that. Ellie wants to say something.
Yeah, I think, like, one useful way of thinking about this is that, you know, we're pretty happy with the current state of, you know, the recommendations and research for GiveWell 1, and we're not optimistic about the, like, marginal value of pouring a lot of additional resources into doing more of the types of things that we've done in the past for GiveWell 1. And, you know, therefore, a lot of the goal for GiveWell 1 is something we've talked about in different ways. I guess you could call it life support, though that's a little pejorative. I mean, I think the phrase, like, building a sustainable entity is more like it, where, you know, we no longer feel that the primary goal for the year needs to be more research, more causes, more charities, because there's now, like, really no cause that fits into the traditional criteria of GiveWell 1 that we haven't put significant effort into. And therefore, instead, we want to move to a place where we can continue to slowly go deeper and both on causes and look for organizations and be open to organizations, but we are not going to get a lot of benefit from the type of activities that Holden talked about before, you know, going to organizations and really harassing them to share information with us on the off chance that they end up being one of our, you know, our top rated organizations.
So I agree with that. I did want to finish what I was saying because, you know, there is. I wasn't done saying what I think is worth doing for GiveWell 1, and then I was going to say some things that I also feel like are not worth doing for GiveWell 1. So another thing that I think is worth doing for GiveWell 1, you know, broadly speaking, I think it's worth it to be doing more intervention reports And that means kind of looking into more, you know, more things that we have the sense are pretty good, pretty proven, pretty cost effective, but we haven't nailed them down. And, you know, looking into those so that we know more about the intervention for the day when a charity comes along that can kind of meet those criteria, and also so that we can highlight organizations that I would say are more like FCI, where we're not able to communicate with them particularly well. We're not very optimistic about learning a lot about them through, you know, periodic updates, but, hey, they're basically a credible organization that does a good intervention, and some people might like that, and they should know that. So I think that is, like, kind of conceptually worth doing, is those kind of intervention reports. And another thing that's conceptually worth doing is this continued, you know, going deeper and deeper and deeper and answering every question that someone could think of. So, you know, something that I spent a lot of time on in 2012 was this question of, like, you know, insecticide resistance, this question of, like, whether child mortality has fallen in the last 10 years, that means better, less cost effective. Like, these are investigations that I did that took a huge amount of time and usually resulted in, like, tiny adjustments to our cost effectiveness numbers. So I think both that and the intervention reports, these are things that are broadly worth doing, but that I don't think I should be doing directly with the kind of hours I put into them in 2012 at a cost to the work I could be doing for GiveWell Labs or for GiveWell 2. And so what I think is worth doing is hiring the people who can do them, because I personally believe right now, I would guess, that there are people out there who can do this work. They may not be easy to find, but there are people out there who can do this work really well and who will be happy doing this work, and who won't, you know, be a better fit for GiveWell 2. And so, like, basically what I think is definitely worth doing is kind of doing the charity updates. Those are really high ROI, and I'll do it myself if I have to. Doing the, you know, the open door policy, making it really clear what a charity has to send us. That's also really high ROI. I'll do that if I have to. And then looking for people who can do these other activities that I described, which is going deeper and deeper and studying more and more interventions so that you really have that knowledge base. So those are the things that I think are, you know, that I would be willing to put my time into if no one else were doing them, and then I would basically want the remainder of my time to go into GiveWell 2. Dev's saying he has to go soon. Okay, yeah.
So maybe the final kind of fact to present here that I think is worth sharing before moving on is just kind of very roughly speaking, like, some of the percentages that we, like, how we expect people's time to actually break down. You know, I think Holden will sort of be between 50 and 75% time on GiveWell 2. I think I'll be closer to, you know, 75% time on GiveWell 1 with a primary goal of hiring being, like, the main way I'm spending my time. You know, Alexander will probably be 50-50 on both. And then, you know, I think the rest of the analysts will more likely be working on GiveWell 1 type activities, a lot of which, you know, includes the administration of the organization, answering donor questions and processing donations and the website and things like that. But, you know, they may do GiveWell 2 work if and when it seems like there's productive work for them to do there.
And one more thing I'll throw in, which is the stuff that I think is not worth doing for GiveWell 1. I outlined some of it. Like, I don't think that, like, I would not want to do what I did in 2012 and spend, like, a huge amount of hours on tiny tweaks to our cost-effectiveness estimates at the cost of GiveWell 2, although I think these investigations were really interesting and had value. I wouldn't want to do that again at the cost of GiveWell 2. You know, another thing I think is not really worth doing at the cost of GiveWell 2 is really working hard to find more SCIs and going into the level of depth we went into there. And I think that's a pretty debatable proposition, but basically how I feel is, like, SCI is a credible organization that does a good intervention. That's about the extent of what we know about it, despite having put a ton of time into it. I feel like the two organizations that we feel really good about are the ones where it kind of was easy all along, and they sent us a lot of information, and we kind of evaluated them quickly. In groups like SCI, that it hasn't been as easy with, we've spent, like, way more time to way less effect. And so I don't think that doing the kind of in-depth investigation we did of SCI is worth it. I think I would want to do that investigation of someone like you directly or AMF that, you know, the investigation is capable of being done in an efficient manner. So those are some things that I think are kind of not worth doing on the GiveWell 1 front.
Another way you said it before to me, Holden, was Like, you're not excited about putting a bunch of work into charities that could come in third place. Like,
yeah.
So I also think that that, because, you know, you could imagine charities that could come in third place that are easier to communicate with than SEI. It's not just their communication
right.
or their lack of, you know, ability to communicate clearly, but also, like, you're just not excited about organizations that don't have the potential to, like, beat AMF and give directly as opportunities.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That is a better way of putting it. I mean, if there were an intervention that were so much better than VetNets, then potentially I'd look into a more SCI-type organization. But, yes, that's exactly right. And I think it's worth noting that, like, we basically feel like we're not going to beat AMF except by finding the really rare organization that communicates really well and really directly and that is able to pass that kind of tough open-door policy. I really don't think that if we have the open-door policy that we're going to find another AMF or GiveDirectly on top of that policy by, like, doing kind of the stuff we've done in the past, like the website scan.
Can I ask you guys, and also Carrie, is one or two more aligned with Good Ventures' approach or philosophy? I mean, is that an element in this at all?
I think definitely two is what Good Ventures is doing. I mean, I think, you know, the charities that have come out of GiveWell One are the best giving opportunities we know of, and Good Ventures has supported them. But, you know, I think it's weird I'm speaking for Carrie, but I think this was kind of an obvious one. So, Carrie, tell me off if I'm wrong, but... You know, I think GiveWell 2 is more what Good Ventures does.
That's right.
That makes sense, right? Like, proven cost-effective scalable is, like, to people in the developing world is one type of giving you can do, and now there's all these other areas of giving that seem worth investigating that, you know, maybe as good, maybe worse, maybe better, but, you know, man, if you just want to give away money to accomplish as much good as possible, it seems imperative to investigate those other areas as well.
Right. I think there are opportunities that come with scale that could be better than delivering BedNets. And that could include advocating, you know, Western governance to spend more on BedNets, right? Like, that could be a more leverage use of kind of large-scale philanthropy. And I think Holden's written, written posts to that extent, or at least mentioned, you know, that idea in posts that, you know, large-scale philanthropists, you know, should, or, you know, could expect, should at least aim to do better than delivery of proven cost-effective interventions, which is not to say we don't believe in, you know, the former approach. I sort of believe in a kind of a portfolio approach. I mean, doing some low-risk, you know, proven cost-effective things and also kind of supporting the kind of GiveWell traditional, you know, GiveWell One platform, but at the same time, you know, investigating higher risk, higher potential reward, and sort of moving our giving, you know, much more in that direction over time.
Yeah. I mean, I want to add something, too, which is just, I mean, I think it's worth considering that we've talked to a lot of major philanthropists over the last year or two, and, like, a very common theme when you talk to them is just, like, this proven cost-effective stuff is easy. Anyone can do it, and it's the proper domain of governments and, like, maybe individuals. Like, governments and individuals, like, can do this stuff, which, you know, all you have to do is kind of, like, know what's proven and, like, deliver it, deliver BedNets. And, like, the world needs people to take bigger risks than that and to, you know, to be the people who develop the malaria vaccine and the people who, like, you know, build new institutions. And, like, we are a major foundation. We have qualified people. We have, you know, the ability to work on whatever we want. And, like, we owe it to the world to work on this stuff that's higher risk because anyone can do this proven stuff. And the proven stuff is just not very hard and not very, you know, there's lots of people can do it. So we need them both, and we're better positioned to do the first one. And, like, we will do a lot more good, and we will play our role a lot better by taking bigger risks. I mean, that, I think, is very consistent conventional wisdom among major philanthropists. It doesn't mean it's right. But I think these people are definitely credible and intelligent enough that I think this is worth serious consideration. But this is not a very disputed point. And to say that paying for the delivery of bed nets is better than going out and taking risks, I think would just contradict what all these people believe. And I'm not a person who believes that just because everyone believes something makes it right, but I think it should carry some weight. And I have the sense that they probably are right.
I'm still hearing a lot of things that I have no issue at all with. And at one time I thought were kind of within the GiveWell umbrella, and a few things, supporting vaccines, at one point in time, and I still, at one point in time, GiveWell had a project to do research on disease research, and it kind of, I don't know if it ever quite got published. I thought it was a fairly major effort, and it kind of faded away. But I think having GiveWell, whether it's under GiveWell 1, GiveWell 2, or just in general GiveWell, if there needs to even be a separation, say, malaria vaccine or any other kind of vaccine or knowledge propagation or what have you, all these kinds of issues. Now, some of them don't fit with what a guy donating $1,000 can do, because, yes, they may need a foundation, they may need $3 million from a foundation to even be serious about it. And 3 years ago, GiveWell was not making recommendations to those kind of organizations, and perhaps now GiveWell has. But I don't see any of that as fundamentally a disconnect from what GiveWell has always done. I think, if anything, GiveWell 1 moved away from that model a couple of years ago, and I was fine with it, doing some of that. The only thing I object to really is things that is, well, I guess there are various possible areas, but the political thing scares me, and I think it, other than that, because I think that presents just all kinds of PR and perceptual, and it's a whole ball of wax that I think is problematic. But otherwise, loosening restrictions and saying, it doesn't have to be something that delivers, that saves a 5-year-old life in Kenya next year to be useful, I don't see how that's a contradiction at all to what GiveWell 1 at least.
I would say the sense in which the contradiction, Phil, is that if you're doing, if you're trying to develop a malaria vaccine, there's just no such thing as proven cost-effective scalable. There's nothing. I can't show you the study that says that I will get any particular result from developing this malaria vaccine. Any historical analogy I draw is going to be just that, an analogy. So that's, basically it's going to be like, it may bother you a lot less than politics, and I totally understand why that is. And, I agree it should bother you less than politics, and I purposely pick politics as like the wackiest thing. But, in the end, it's just not going to look like the GiveWell that patiently reviewed the evidence and picked the things that met certain criteria. It's going to look like, we talked to a bunch of people and this is what we thought. And it'll be something in between, because there will be empirical questions and we'll consider them and there will be debates and we'll pull up all the evidence we can find. But
I think it's a very data-driven question. I think you can say, and I thought you kind of went down this path to some extent before, you can say, if we're to zoom in specifically on a malaria vaccine. Okay, I'm not into the medical issue. So malaria, I believe, is caused by a bacteria, right? So we could look at and say, what bacterial combative vaccines have been developed in the past, how much effort has been spent on them in the past, how long has it taken, et cetera. I think there's a whole series of data-driven, it's not just talking to a doctor and he says, well, things look good, give us some money and we'll probably have vaccine for you in a few years. I think there's a whole bunch of questions. Now there's going to be uncertainty at the end. Nobody's going to be able to say, well, if we get an extra $1 million, that will move the vaccine date up exactly 2.7, weeks. But, you're not doing that right now with bed nets anyways. It's probably a little more hazy than bed nets, but
this is right. When we analyze these causes, we're going to look for data and we're going to try to assess them in a look at the history and look at the facts and try to understand what will happen. The issue, so that's all true. I mean, it would make sense that that's how we'll go about addressing these questions. I do think there's been a shift at GiveWell since the time that we had the, sort of aborted or unsuccessful look into disease research a few years ago. And it's worth remembering that, like, two things. So one is that, you know, the research process that we went through to arrive at our recommendation, certainly in 2011 and 2012, was one that, like, really heavily focused on evidence and empirical evidence in a way that, you know, wasn't even true of the recommendation of Village Reach in 2009 and 2010. We certainly relied on evidence. There's no question. And we, but, you know, we brought the research and the, I guess the standard evidence had to meet to a higher bar in 2011 and then in 2012 than had previously existed. And, you know, so, you know, that's one thing. And over that same period of time, we, you know, essentially came into contact with most of the dollars, at least, that currently support our top charities. And, you know, that's just like an empirical fact that there's, you know, we are moving far more money now and far more people have found us in the last 2 years than previously. And I believe that there's a significant contingent of people who, were we to rewind back to early 2010 and be talking about disease research, would be very confused about how that fit with the brand of the GiveWell offering, because they perceive it to be the recommendations we've made in 2011 and 2012.
So I want to talk about, I mean, let's talk about this vaccine thing for a second. Like, it's true that, you know, there's a lot of information that can be collected that's relevant. It's also true that, like, no two diseases are exactly the same. Like, the number of malaria vaccines that have developed so far that are really useful is zero, and there's a reason for that, which is that malaria is transmitted by mosquitoes, which evolve particularly quickly, and it's a special challenge. And, you know, we've just got a different world in many ways from the world of in which we came up with these other vaccines. And so, you know, there's a lot we can do to learn. There's a lot to be learned. It's not just talking to two people and deciding what seems right to our intuition. But there's also, it's not going to be like GiveWell traditional, where X dollars does Y and we have an estimate and the estimate's all grounded in evidence. And the same is going to apply to political advocacy. I mean, we can look at an issue and we can say, okay, you know, what is the evidence here? There will be economic studies. The studies will have different levels of validity. They'll have different levels of generalizability. There will be other countries that have certain kind of policies. We'll see how those policies go. We can line up the arguments on both sides. When we actually come to doing the advocacy, we can look at, you know, what the track record is of advocacy in getting change and what kind of factors have led to it. But ultimately, we're going to be kind of guessing. And I just think that applies to, I mean, I think that applies to both politics and to vaccines in a way that it doesn't to delivering vetnets. Like, yes, evidence matters. And I think we are very evidence-oriented people. And I think we will use evidence wherever we can find it in a way that people, you know, maybe aren't used to in philanthropy. So I think that will continue to be a big part of our brand. But I think with both of those, you have the same core change.
I think you'll have a broader, I think the results of a study that would say, you know, what's the cost effectiveness of, or what's the cost of developing a malaria vaccine, will have a broader range. I mean, right now you probably, I don't even remember if you've been doing this the last year or two, but you probably have a point estimate of how many, you know, dollars it takes to save a life or a daily with a bed net, and it's an estimate, but it's probably, you know, reasonably narrow. With a malaria vaccine, you know, it might be one or even two orders of magnitude of range of saying, you know, malaria vaccine will cost between $100 million and $15 billion to develop, but it'll have these impacts. But I still think it's the same general concept. Now, I can certainly see why some donors may look at that and say, you know, I'd rather save lives now in a more certain way with bed nets than sort of the gamble on a vaccine. I think you're underestimating donors a little bit in that respect, you know, that every donor is going to want the proven, narrow, exact, you know, range of a bet. I think if you present it clearly and say, you know, this one's got these uncertainties in a broader range, I think that fits very well within what GiveWell has already done. I think on the political advocacy thing, on the one hand, you could certainly analyze the dollars it takes to get a policy change, you know, to change a mid-level policy in a state legislature in a southern state costs approximately this and has this percentage chance of success. You know, nationally it costs this. in Europe across this, and it would be a broad range. It could be done. The problem there is not that you couldn't analyze that from a data perspective. It's that, you know, this is a specific example. You've been shy in specific examples for political stuff, but you did mention one, which is saying that advocating to have governments give more bed nets, which is, you know, reasonably consistent with what GiveWell has already done anyways, in terms of thinking bed nets are a good idea. I just think that the idea that it's a somewhat of a different metric to say I'm going to use my money to support something specifically, bed nets, then start getting into, well, we shouldn't send bed nets directly, we should bug the government to do it and spend money to get our congressman to do it. I mean, a lot of people are going to support both, but I think it's really kind of a different domain.
Yeah, I think they're all a different domain. So maybe, you know, Ellie's pointing out that maybe vaccines aren't the best example. I mean, I think they're a good example, but we can go to, you know, back to the meta research example. You know, that's not, I mean, I don't know. Like, I think it's pretty different. I think if you're trying to change the way that academia works and the way incentives work and fund projects to do that so that research gets done in a more valuable way, like, I don't know. Like, we can talk about what gets close with what. My opinion is that the relevant distinction is between, you know, GiveWell stands above the fray and looks at the evidence and finds things that fit specific criteria versus GiveWell's just trying to do the most good possible. And I think that's a relevant distinction. I think some people want the first and some people want the second. So I don't know. Like, to me the correct category difference is between those two things. You could say to us that, you know, there's a certain set of things that you think are totally fine, and a certain set of things that you think are, like, beyond the pale. And we can, you know, maybe that's a better conversation for offline. You know, I think what I'm putting forward as my point of view is that the relevant distinction is the distinction I've drawn, and that we are going to have to keep those things separate because people will view them as very separate. And I think that, you know, the fact that Phil is more comfortable with meta research than he is with political advocacy, I mean, I think there will be plenty of people who are very uncomfortable with meta research or with developing vaccines because it's just not going to look the same. It's not going to be like we have this evidence on what's worked before and we're doing it again.
I think you should certainly, you know, poll, and obviously this conversation is part of that, but you should talk to your supporters and get a feel for what everybody thinks and not use a point sample of Phil or a point sample of Tom or whatever. You know, talk to a lot of people and get different vibes on it, obviously. One thing I would say is that there's a little bit of a difference, in my opinion, between GiveWell making a recommendation that I or somebody else doesn't agree. I wasn't a big fan of the GiveDirectly recommendation, no secret there. But, you know, I didn't feel like, oh, it radically, you know, it was a different set of values that you guys have. So whatever, you guys liked that one, I didn't, you know, it's not the end of the world. You guys, you know, I happen to like meta research, but let's say you guys went in and let's say I didn't like vaccines. Actually, I like vaccines too. But let's say I didn't like vaccines and I said, and you guys did some research and said, here's the best vaccine approach. It wouldn't bother me, you know, it wouldn't bother me much. I just look at it and you're, you know, that's something that doesn't interest me. Not every charity you put up on your website interests me. Again, not to spend too much time on it, but the political thing I think is a truly different element. I think you have the potential to alienate people there, like, in a way that is different from the potential to merely present research that doesn't click with people.
Yeah, I mean, but it sounds kind of now, Phil, like you're mostly talking about PR issues. Like, and we can talk about those when we get to them, but right now we're talking about, like, research strategy. I mean, is the only thing you're saying that if we do something controversial, such as politics, that we may alienate people? I mean, is that, you know, to me, the really important distinction from a research strategy perspective is, like, you know, the super in-depth research proven stuff where we can answer any question versus the stuff where, you know, it's much more guesswork. That's the, like, a really important distinction that, like, we have to figure out how many hours we're going to spend on each. And then, you know, the point that some of the things we come up with under heading two will really kind of piss people off and be controversial and alienate people versus some won't. I mean, I think that's more of a PR question than a research strategy question, although you could certainly say we shouldn't spend our time researching things that might piss people off, but I don't know. I mean, I guess you have
to decide what you're good at. I mean, there's all kinds of things that you could look into. I mean, I was just thinking the other day, you know, I was watching Downton Abbey, and at the end it says Downton Abbey is, provided by the generous support of X, Y, and Z people. I like the Downton Abbey. I've got something out of it. I could certainly make an argument that I should give money to PBS to show more episodes of Downton Abbey and things like that. But it's a different thing. I just don't think it's not a GiveWell thing. GiveWell could research that and say, well, 20 million people watch Downton Abbey, you know, people should support Downton Abbey. I think you need to decide what you're good at and not only what you're good at, but also sort of what feels right. And I just think politics, in my opinion, doesn't fall within the broader thing. Now the question of what degree of evidence you need, whether you need, you know, scientific studies or whether, you know, how much judgment calls go in and what, you know, when you're doing vaccine things and there's a lot more murkiness and a lot more guesswork, I don't see as clear a delineation there as you do. You know, so be it. I think as long as you clearly express the limitations of your research, I don't have a problem with things that have, you know, less clear-cut evidence behind them. I don't necessarily see that as a reason why you sort of need to cleave the organization in two.
All right. Well, I guess Phil's expressing the opinion that, like, that there's some things that can alienate people and piss people off, and there's other things that don't. And, you know, as long as we stick to stuff that don't, it should all go under one heading. And I think that's Phil's opinion, and I think we're going to have to see what other stakeholders think. I mean, I suspect that's not going to be the distinction that counts for everyone. And I also want to put it out there that, you know, I have ambitions to look at the broad universe of giving opportunities and not to shy away from stuff on the grounds that it might alienate people.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that. I think it should all, as I said before, I think it should all be on the website. I think you guys, if you handle it right, you know, talking about politics and talking about dollars spent on lobbying is, you know, if you frame it correctly, it's a really important question. It's something people don't talk about elsewhere. People don't think about, you know, influencing the political process or influencing NGOs as an alternative to donating to charities. So I think that's a really interesting and really meaningful discussion to have on the website. I mean, this conversation can go on for a long time, and I think it probably will. But I think it's perfectly valid in under the heading of GiveWell Labs. I mean, again, I really think the biggest issue is marshaling the resources to do all the stuff you want to do. And I guess I would say one point that you might want to tie that to is it's another way to sort of highlight the issue of transparency, important transparency in philanthropy. I mean, it would be a hell of a lot easier to do a lot more if you guys could get easier access to the data and to the work of other people doing this kind of analysis. And I think, you know, maybe coupling that point with, you know, an effort to try and draw on other resources might be a good discussion to have publicly.
Yeah. I agree with Tom said, and I also think, you know, having people who think about policy from like a rational humanitarian perspective is so valuable. And I think, you know, based on what you said about the kinds of policies you want to, or you see as potentially promising giving opportunities holding, you know, policies where, you know, smart humanitarians on both kind of sides of the aisle agree, makes me feel like you aren't going to be, I mean, probably when we're sitting here thinking about policy advocacy, you know, really kind of the most extreme and polarizing examples come to mind. And I do think it's really important to think about how to, you know, what is actually tractable in kind of a hyper-polarized political environment right now. But, I mean, that all seems, as Tom said, like it should be, you know, part of the discussion about what makes a good giving opportunity.
All right. One thing that I think we've kicked around this idea before, but I'm thinking about it again, is like a survey of people to figure out exactly what our donors see as relevant distinctions, and, you know, what are the things that you're interested in us researching versus what are the things that you're not interested in, but it wouldn't really bother you if we researched them, versus what are the things that would really alienate you. So I think that's something that's going to be worth doing. But I think the biggest, you know, the biggest thing that we came into this call wanting to talk about is the fact that we think we have two different projects going on, because we do have a suspicion that there are people who are really going to want to stick to the proven stuff, and who aren't going to like, you know, some of the newer stuff. And we've talked about how to allocate resources, and, you know, that's led to kind of, you know, the conclusions that we've delivered about what we think is worth it on kind of the original GiveWell stuff. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to kind of wrap up where I see what I see this as having come in to emphasize. And I think, you know, an additional question has come up, which is that, like, maybe the distinction that seems most important to us is not the distinction that seems most important to our donors. And that's an empirical question that we can survey more people to find out more about. But, I mean, really right now we were just trying to, you know, get people's basic input. So there's nothing, there's no action item, there's no vote, so I don't know. I guess at this point I'll just ask if people have more pressing comments and questions. Obviously we're also happy to take more comments and questions by email, and, you know, if there aren't any, then we'll call it a night. All right, I guess we'll call it a night. Thanks everyone, we really appreciate it. And, definitely continue to share your thoughts as you have them.
Great. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Bye.